Welcome to the back porch, everybody. It's good to see you. I'm Brandon, your host, and I have with me today my trusty co-hosts, Matt Boland and Peter Gamble. Welcome, guys.
Great to see you guys.
Yeah, good to be here with you, Brandon and Matt.
I'm really excited about this show. We haven't had one of these kind of roundtable conversations for a little while. We've been doing some interviews. So it's kind of fun to be back just on the back porch with you guys chatting about stuff, which listeners, we have an interesting episode. We're going to be talking about the Psalms today, but hopefully be praying the Psalms a little bit together, meditating on them a little bit together, specifically around emotions. What kinds of emotions the Psalms help us to express, think through, meditate on. If you go back a few episodes to our interview with Heidi Gaiman, she talks about how to modulate emotions, like letting emotions move through us, articulating emotions, things that help us process emotions, which was a really great conversation. But that got my head going. And I was like, you know, I'd like to dig into the Psalms with that in mind. So that's what we're going to do. And we'll see how it goes. Before we do that, though, we have a couple of things to say. I want to tell you that you, by the time this episode airs, you'll have about a week left to register for our spring retreat if you still want to come. If there's spots still available by the time you are looking at our website when this episode comes out, which there should be a few, please jump on it. We'd love to have you with us. It's that last weekend of April, 26th through the 29th. Check it out, signpostin.org/retreats. It's going to be a pretty amazing retreat. We're going to do some of the stuff there in a more unpacked way that we're going to do on this episode. Also, if you haven't signed up for our email news list yet, you really need to do so. You get a free ebook on anxiety and prayers that can help obliterate anxiety. That people are really responding well to that ebook, and it's free. All you have to do is go to the website, click the little signpostin.org, click the link that says free ebook, sign up, give us your email. That's it. And then you, on top of that, get an awesome email every week. Last 2 weeks, this has been a while when you listen to this, but last 2 weeks, Peter has put out two articles that are kind of conjoined, which are really brilliant. We're going to do a podcast on them some point in time, kind of comparing our relationship to God's, how it sometimes feels like we're getting spam. And it's like, you know, God@urgency.com and how that's not actually God, or how sometimes it feels like we're leaving messages for God and how to think differently about that. And those have been just two examples of what goes out in our email every week. So sign up for it. It's pretty awesome. And finally, if you are listening to this podcast, we have a Facebook group specifically for you. It's The Back Porch. Just go to Facebook, search Signpost In, find The Back Porch. Join us. It's free to join. It's open to everybody. We'd love to have you. And we'd especially love to have your conversations, your questions, and thoughts on the Facebook group. Matt, Peter, am I forgetting any of the introductory stuff before we jump into our brief updates from the back porch?
I don't think so. Let's get into it. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Updates. What, Peter, you want to go first today? You got anything for sharing?
Yeah. Let's see.
It's okay. Like show and tell.
Yeah. Let's see. What have I been into lately? I've been enjoying / intentionally trying to draw more as of the last month or so. I like art, specifically drawing though, with pencils, and stuff. I'm not good with colors and things. So just a pencil and paper has always been something I kind of enjoy. I think I shared this, on Facebook through our, you know, signpost in the other day and stuff, but it was hitting me like, as I've sat down to try and draw, not just like a scene from my head, like sometimes a woodland scene or something, but as I sit down and like try and look at something and draw what I'm seeing, like a building, I found it almost like a contemplative sort of experience because I have to be really present. I have to really notice and I have to put aside my preconceived thoughts about what that building looks like. Like yesterday I was sitting, I had some time in the car and I was sitting in the car, looking across the street at this church. And, I was trying to draw and capture some of it. And it's just amazing how much reality is so weird and quirky when I'm like, why does the wall bulge out here? Like, I think it should be straight. Like, but if I'm drawing what I see, I have to like include this little piece of what that building actually looks like. And when I start out, nothing looks right. It's like, I'm like, what is going on? This is like chicken scratch. But then there's this moment where suddenly all these little details that I'm trying to capture, like snap together into like a recognizable, like that looks like that. And it doesn't look like how a building ought to be. Like it looks like that one.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. It's really satisfying to get to that level. And
yeah,
it's also
cool.
I think for me, it's a neat practice of helping me slow down to notice what's actually going on around. So I've enjoyed that. It's funny. I was talking about this with my aunt, who's very artistic, and she always is encouraging me to, continue using my abilities and such and growing. But I think artists experience this, or just hobbies and things that we want to enjoy can so often easily become like pressure, like, oh, I should be enjoying this. And if I'm not enjoying this, like, so I rarely like want to sit down and draw because I have this like, oh, what if I don't do good this time and don't enjoy, like, it's this weird like pressure chamber. But once I like actually sit down and like do it and kind of put aside those concerns and just focus on giving it a go, I actually enjoy it. So maybe if that's relatable to you listeners, here's just my bid for just sit down, say, whatever, I'm just going to try something, put aside that voice of inner criticism and just go for it. So there you go.
I don't know if I've told this story before, but very briefly in college, I took art classes in my senior year because I had finished most of my other work. So I had like this, I had to do all these electives. And so I took an art course, which killed my GPA. It was so funny. And we went outside and just tried to draw perspective drawings of buildings. And the art teacher actually gathered the entire class behind me to show them how not to do it. And everybody kind of laughed. And it was fine. Like, I was friends with everybody, so it wasn't that big a deal. But when you say set aside your inner critic, I'm like, no, I have this like traumatic inner critic.
Oh, yeah.
Not somebody making fun of my trying to draw buildings. So, Matt, what do you have? What do you got? What's your update?
This is kind of funny. A friend of mine, surprised me, gave me the gift of getting me a concert ticket. And tomorrow there's four of us, all, you know, men in our early 40s going to see the Christian rock band Disciple. And I love Christian rock. these guys, it's really funny because these guys got their start in the late 90s. And it's just, I'm kind of wondering what the audience is going to be made up of. All middle-aged white dudes probably, but it's exciting. It's the first time, it's the first time I've been to a concert in a long time. And it's just silly and fun. And it's the first thing that I'm really blessed by this friend.
What kind of rock are they?
Oh, they're hard rock.
Yeah. They're in Christian circles growing up, that was like, oh, they're kind of metal, but they're Christian, so it's okay, sort of thing. Actually, when you said Disciple, Matt, I was like, they're still playing?
They are, and they still have a huge following, and they're still putting out music. They have like four albums since the last one that I remember getting. I'm like, holy cow, they're still really putting out a lot of stuff. In fact, they had a tour going on that was supposed to go on during COVID. And so instead they just did their whole set online in 2020, for free. Like, they're just like, hey,
wow,
people are locked inside. They can't come to shows, but you know what? People need to rock out.
That's awesome. When are you going tonight? Did you say
tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Have fun. I have to go check them out on Spotify now.
I'm literally pulling them up right now because I'm like, man, I'm trying to recall in my brain some of the stuff I did listen to back in the day. Because a decade ago in high school, I literally saw them. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Creation Fest, like the big Christian music festivals on the East Coast and West Coast. I went like 6 times, like because we lived like 2.5 hours away from it growing up. And it was awesome. I loved it. But they were always on the fringe stage because the main stage about endorsing that heavy of a metal.
Oh, man. My goodness. Oh, man. You guys are... I can't say what I was thinking. You guys are the kinds of Christians I made fun of when I was a teenager. Creation Fest.
Hey man, it was a blast and a half.
You don't know what you're missing.
I know. No, I was an arrogant jerk. I admit it. I've admitted it way too many times on this show, so everybody knows. All right. Well, here now you guys get to make fun of me. Here's my update. You all know that I'm a believer in Bitcoin, right? You may not know that because I'm such a believer in Bitcoin, Signpost Den takes donations in Bitcoin. People have donated to us via Bitcoin. What you may not even know beyond that is we have a Gemini account, which is a exchange. So you can, I'll show it to you real quick. Here you go. Here's Bitcoin, the Bitcoin chart on our Gemini account. And right now, as of March 22nd, when we're recording, we're sitting at $63,000 of Bitcoin, which, you know, if you look at the all time, there you go. Back in time ago, it was $400 and now it's here. So we hit an all time high. We're doing pretty great. All right. All of that to say, you can donate Bitcoin to Signpost Den without having to actually buy any Bitcoin and then send it to us. You can actually, we're going to put a link in our show notes and in our YouTube video notes with a referral link. If you sign up for a Gemini account and buy $15 of Bitcoin, then we both get free $15 of Bitcoin. It's like an easy way to donate Bitcoin to Signpost Den if you are interested in getting into this whole thing. Now, if you do get into it, don't blame me if you lose all your money because it's a really risky thing. Don't put a ton of money in Bitcoin. Don't put anything in any stock or anything that you can't risk or you can't lose. That's the advice you have to have. And Signpost Den is not a financial show, so we know nothing about what we're talking about. There you go. But if you've been interested and you want to get in, this is your chance. Click this link that we have in the show notes and you can get in. You can buy $15 or $20 worth of Bitcoin and you give some Bitcoin to us too at the same time. It's easy. All right. Let's actually talk about what we're here to talk about.
What is that? What are we here to talk about? I thought this was just hanging.
Hey, Disciple
yeah,
has.
Let's just listen to the set list right now. Let's just
Disciple, rock it. Disciple has a album called Skeleton Psalms. So, you know, maybe it's perfectly in line.
It could, yeah, maybe we just need to be listening to it the whole way through. Actually, okay, listeners, in all seriousness, what you need to do right now, before you go any further into this episode, assuming you've made it past the nonsense that we just talked about, is you need to pause this podcast, and then you need to go listen to the Bible Project's video. It's like an 8-minute video on the Book of Psalms. Just, we'll wait for you. Pause. Go over to the Bible Project, listen to their Psalms introduction. It's about 8 minutes. Okay, so assuming you just watched that video, you have a wonderful overview of what's going on in the Book of Psalms, and we don't have to like take a whole bunch of time to unpack it here. In fact, that's really not what we want to do. What we want to do, we actually have an episode on that if you want to in our archives with Adam Hensley. And we talk a lot about what the Psalms are and what they're doing. But what we do want to talk about today is using the Psalms, praying with the Psalms through different emotions. And in order to be able to do that well, I do think, guys, we have to kind of introduce a couple of things. So if you watched the video, you already know this. If you didn't watch the video, that's okay. The book of Psalms is really a book of praise, and it has an order to it. So the whole book is structured. It's been put together by a collector, and it follows kind of a story. And that's why in your Bibles, you'll see there's the book one, book two, book three, book four of the Psalms, book five of the Psalms. And you'll notice that there is, if you read the whole thing, there's a sweep. It's sort of more lament at the beginning, more praise at the end. And the book of Psalms is sort of the prayer book for God's people as they're living out the story of salvation. That's how I'll say it. It's really pretty fascinating, and that's very helpful in both understanding the entire book of Psalms, but also in when you're reading one psalm, it helps to kind of know where you are in the story. I wouldn't say you have to know all of that. I would just say it's sort of helpful. So that being said, it's also good to know that the Psalms are poetry, right? They're Hebrew, ancient Hebrew poetry. So it's different than the kind of poetry that we're familiar with in English, which usually rhymes, usually has meter and structure. Ancient Hebrew poetry did not have the same kind of structure. They had different things that structured their poems. So for example, sometimes they're non-linear, like they don't follow a certain flow of thought. They bounce back and forth. There's this thing called thought rhyme, which makes tons of sense to a guy like me. Thought rhyme makes more sense to me than regular rhyme sometimes, but thought rhyme just being that the lines agree and complement each other based on the idea rather than on the sound of the word. So they often build. You'll see two lines that say the same thing, but the first one is a lighter version of the second one, strengthens it or unpacks it. You'll see contrasts. You know, there's the good men are the righteous is like this, the wicked are like this. So thoughts cluster together and complement each other, and then of course figurative language. So lots of imagery. God is like compared to a rock. Various, you know, water shows up in many different ways. And it helps to have some sense of what that imagery means. But more important than like knowing the details, I think you can get caught in the weeds. I think if you were to be like, oh, is this a thought rhyme? Is this, what does the rock in this psalm represent? I actually think that distracts you more than helps you. Because the way you understand what those things are in the Psalms is the same way you would do it with any poetry at all. So, pause for a second. Matt, Peter, things you would add to that before we go into like the, what I'm calling my quick and easy guide for reading a poem?
When you say that this is showing my deep literary genius, but when you say that you would understand the Psalms just like you understand any other poems, I'm like, great, so I just don't understand.
Yeah, can we just get a quick poll and see how many people actually read poetry just as a regular thing in their life? I mean,
yeah,
the last time I read poetry was when I was assigned poetry.
Hey, recently, I've tried to read some G.K. Chesterton poems. He has a poems. Man, I don't.
Okay,
of them, I don't get any of them.
Okay, time out. Okay, yes. Go to the Facebook group and tell us whether you read poems regularly or not. So, you know, the jocks in the room can make fun of us. But anyway, did you catch it? I pushed my glasses up. All right. But no, you all read poetry all the time. Did you sing a song last Sunday at your church?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you read poetry. I mean, you sang poetry, right? Like, have you listened to music on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever in the last week?
Yeah, Disciple, obviously.
Exactly. Obviously. Yeah. we're not going to get into the debate of what's quote unquote good poetry, because that's
stop. Stupid. I see what you're doing right there. You watch it.
Dang it.
I know you too well. That was a veiled attack.
I don't know that it was all that veiled, Matt. But, okay. But the reality is, you do read and you do listen to, we all do. Poetry actually is everywhere. And it's just because it's not 18th century English poetry doesn't mean you're not reading poetry. And I think, in dead seriousness, I mean, okay, listen, I listen to EDM music. That's my favorite kind of music. So if you want to talk about poor poetry, on the other hand, the principle of how, okay, so here's the mistake we make. Weirdly, when we read the Psalms especially, and I think we do the same thing when we, like the question, who reads poetry in their life? If you think of poetry as, you know, like I said, 19th, 18th century English poetry, what we do is we immediately assume that our job is to like understand it like an essay, as if it's didactic, like it's going to teach us something. And we only do that with the poetry that's pretty unfamiliar to us or that is holy, like the Psalms, because nobody's going to go. If you do that at the concert tomorrow night, Matt, if you're like listening to every song, like, what is this didactically teaching me? You're going to have a really boring time at the concert. And they may actually be teaching things, but that's not the primary motive or even the primary means by which it operates, right? I mean, it's music. It's meant to make you feel something. So they teach more by informing the emotions and leading the emotions than they do by the information that they are communicating in their words. Same thing with any other music that we listen to. Same thing with the songs you sung on Sunday. Like, ideally, you're not just putting the sermon to music, right? There's the reason it's put to music is because the music enhances the emotional involvement, engagement, pull. Is that making sense?
Yes, that's helpful. That's helpful for me to say, okay, yes, there is commonplace poetry that we all sort of engage with and enjoy. Because certainly if poetry is just the highfalutin stuff of English class in high school, then count me out.
Yeah. Okay, so that would be the first step in what I would call my quick and easy guide for reading poetry of any kind, which is to set aside that preconception or that desire for it to be didactic, to be a like prose essay that is giving me data that I'm supposed to then put into some thought process and figure out. If you approach a poem like it's something to figure out, like it's a like literally like a math problem, I'm going to figure it, then you'll miss the poem. Like you will actually not read the poem. You will be doing, it's like trying to approach a horse with wrenches and ratchet sets. It you'll kill the horse. So don't do that. Poems work first by being evocative, right? Think about what the word evoke is. It's etymologically, it's calling the vocative. It's calling out of us. Evoke is calling forth from us something. And in this case, emotion, feeling, memory, even prayer, especially with the Psalms. So the Psalms are not primarily teaching us data, they are inviting us to pray with them. They are engaging us that they might be our words. So Adam Hensley, go back and listen to him, talks about the Psalms. They live in us and we live in them. So poetry of all kinds is trying to do this, but I would say with the Psalms, it's especially important that it's trying to help guide our emotions, but also be our emotion. It's like inviting us to make them our own as we are informed by them. There's this wonderful play going on. Does that make sense?
I think so. I was, as we were preparing for this conversation, one of the things that I was noting on one of the questions I had kind of connects here, so maybe it's a good spot for it. Because we're talking about the appropriate way to engage the Psalms is to let them, I think you said, inform like us, but then we also conform like our experience to them. Mm-hmm. But I guess the question that comes to my mind is, like you're saying, they're evocative. They call something out of us. And you know, we're going to go into the different types of psalms, psalms of praise, psalms of grief and such. And like, do we come to the Psalms as kind of a blank slate, like, and let ourselves take on whatever emotion we find in the psalm? Or do we, like, that's sort of like how I'm hearing it, like we conform ourselves to the psalm, but is there a sense, like, almost that feels disingenuous to, like, if I'm happy and I read a sad psalm, am I supposed to then be sad and like conform to that? You know, like, I don't know. I just struggle with the idea of that. How does that really work? The conforming ourselves to the psalm, because that almost feel like would be a really disjointed thing if I just like, oh, I'm having a good day, but my quiet time this morning takes me to psalm, whatever, you know, a psalm of lament and grief. And like, should I then be like, all right, now I'm sad and grieving? Like, I don't know if that connects into like what you're saying, and about how we should approach the Psalms.
My suspicion is that you're still, forgive me for being this direct, but you're still sort of approaching the Psalms didactically. You're like looking for them to tell you what you should do. And so you've shifted from it being, okay, I'm supposed to know certain information, to now I'm supposed to feel certain things, and I really should just do whatever they tell me to do. And so I think back out into more normal stuff, like we talked about poetry you're used to listening to. You're listening to your Spotify playlist today. Is there a should in that playlist? Like, you come across the happy song, are you now supposed to be happy? Come across the sad song, are you now supposed to be sad? Or are you just sort of allowing it to be a part of your life? Like, it's just, you just sort of, you sing the song along with it. And we've said this many times before, like, today that sad song doesn't fit the mood, so you skip it and you go to the one that fits more the mood. But it may be that that sad song comes on, you're in a decent mood, and it sort of reminds you, oh, you know what? There is this thing in my life that I'm kind of holding on to, and I do want to process with that with the Lord. Or you're sad and you hit the happy song and it sort of reminds you, calls to your memory, or puts an image in your head that's sustaining, right? And you're not asking the question, am I doing this right or not? You're just, you're sort of living in the music and letting the music live in you.
Yeah, that's hard. I feel like, and you mentioned this earlier, it's really hard to put aside sort of the scriptural lens, though, because like, you come to God's word with the, you know, like, and whether it's through being trained or just sort of the human nature, we come to it looking for direction. Or, you know, I have that lens of like, okay, I come here to, you know, with it, this is an instruction manual. And I recognize, like, I would say rationally, that's not one, right, the primary use of God's word in many cases. But like, there's this internal movement of like, I come with expectations that I need to come up with a takeaway. And it's really hard to. So I guess what I'm saying is I really appreciate this conversation leading into the Psalms, because I think I need it. I think I need this reminder, this refresh of trying to engage with this prayer book of God's people, how it's supposed to be engaged with, rather than trying to dissect it. But it's hard for me to get to that headspace.
Yeah. I mean,
obviously some parts of God's word is an instruction book, right? I mean, the Apostle Paul has some pretty clear times that you're supposed to be instructed and listen and think and change the way you think about things. So sure, that's just not what the Psalms are. Primarily, you know, I mean, we could point out that they quote unquote instruct. So think about what that word means, or what the word inform means, not in terms of data and factual thoughts, but they shape and structure. So sure, in that sense, all poetry is doing that. It's shaping your experience, right? So the best poetry, and this is why poetry is often considered to be the highest form of art, is it actually, by inviting you into the experience of the poem, it gives shape and form to your thoughts, your emotions, even your physical expression. So, of course, in that sense, yeah, it is always informing and instructing us, but not in this like very simplistic enlightenment data for my math calculation of theology. And I think it really helps to kind of keep your mind on the kinds of poetry we constantly listen to and use every day, which is, you know, the common poetry that we're all listening to all the time. We don't go to it for that kind of informational instruction. We go to it for the other kind. That, I mean, good enough. Should we move on from there?
I'm tracking with you.
Okay. All right. So I do think that that's like, We have to spend time on that, because that's to me the biggest barrier to being able to engage the Psalms. I promised that it's a quick and easy guide. So the first step is the hardest. Set aside your preconceptions, approach it differently. Step two, have a pencil and a journal because you'll want to jot things down as they occur to you. Step three, read the thing out loud all the way through. There you go. That's the step. Just pay attention, if you will, to like the feeling of it. Look the mood of it. Look for the major theme, but don't try too hard. Just read the whole thing. Try to get the whole thing kind of out loud in your space. Let yourself feel along with it. Step four, read it out loud again, all the way through. Pay attention to your own responses to it. Step five, read it out loud all the way through a third time. This is when you can start to note things. You can note emotions, images, questions that you have. You may want to pause on certain lines or ideas, but you don't want to get caught in the weeds of any poem. This applies to reading any poem at all. Like, I don't care whether it's a Psalms or not. These steps apply. You don't want to get caught in, what does that image mean? What does that line mean? I don't understand what God's doing here. Before you've taken the time to let the whole thing unfold, because a poem can't be read one line at a time and understood. Because it's not that kind of, you know, an essay can be, you're having to follow the line of argument. But a poem has to have the entire mood, the entire feeling, the whole theme before you can understand any part of it. And that just takes the patience, and you got to let the whole thing unfold a couple of times and kind of catch it. You will completely misunderstand a piece of any poem if you don't put it in the context of the whole thing. And so in the world of reading and literature, there's this famous thing called the hermeneutical spiral. And this is also in biblical interpretation as well. Hermeneutics just means interpretation. But the spiral is that when you start reading a poem, especially, but anything, you start with an assumption about what it means and you read through the whole thing and you come back to your assumption and now you have to correct it because it's like, well, I wasn't quite right about what it meant. Right. And so you get a little bit closer to what the text is really saying. And then you start with, now you have new assumptions and you read the whole thing again. And every time you come back, you're spiraling deeper and deeper or closer and closer around what the thing really is, adjusting your own interpretation as you go. And that's really helpful in thinking about reading a poem. Questions, comments on that?
I think for me, I kind of want to say, well, what am I going to get out of this? Because going back to what I said earlier, it feels like you just assigned me homework, Brandon. And the idea of reading something out loud in my room is weird. That's weird, dude. Who does that? I mean, yeah, I sing to myself whenever I'm singing a song, but this feels weird. This seems weird. Why do I want to do this?
Yeah. Because it will unlock for you connections with God and yourself that you've never had before. It'll be like, okay, so from somebody who has done it, and I'm like just a beginner on this road, but from those people who are far beyond even me, both the ancients and my friends who are far beyond me, you're sort of like asking, what am I going to get out of going to a Ruth Chris steakhouse? I don't understand. I mean, that's weird to go out of my house and go to a steakhouse. What am I going to get? And I'm kind of like, well, dude, you just need to like, I can't tell you, just come and you'll enjoy it. And when you get there, you'll be like, why did I not do this a long time ago? I think that analogy is actually really helpful because if you think of your experience of God and of the world like a meal, there are flavors and dishes that many of us have never experienced. And we are inviting you to flavors and experiences that you didn't even know existed. So, yeah, you get to go to a restaurant with best of all foods, and you're going to come away going, I can't believe I didn't even know you could have that flavor. And it will... Like you, that's why. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that tracks.
Cool. All right. Let's look at a couple Psalms. Any particular, we have a list in front of us, but any particular emotions that you guys think would be helpful to kind of, let's take a Psalm, let's read it for the thing, let's chat about it. Like what, any of them that jump out at you?
So for me, and yeah, looking at this list that we've been sharing here, I definitely gravitate toward the Psalms of Hope, right? Mm-hmm. Because for me, the Psalms are like a prayer book, right? And when I go to prayer, it's because I need God. And oftentimes the need I have is the need for hope, the need for faith, the need for connection with God. And so I definitely gravitate towards Psalms like that, Psalms that remind me of God's goodness and faithfulness. And there's a lot of those, right? They're all over. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So like I'm looking at Psalm 121 right now, very well known. I lift my eyes towards the mountains. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And just this sense of, there's so much to draw out of that, but just this sense of God is like this, a rescuer or a, mm-hmm. you know, savior, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. That here he comes, you know, I'm in a desperate situation. I need a hero. And here he comes. He's that hero. Mm. I love that. I love that imagery.
Yeah. Let's just read. Let's do our thing briefly with Psalm 121. I'll read it through. We're going to, listeners, this is going to be a little weird if you're just listening, because we're going to just take a short pause between readings. I'm going to go ahead and read it three times. Try to do the thing right here and now. Just let the first reading wash over you. If you catch, here's a primary mood, here's a primary theme, great. But what I would encourage you to do is let it be the theme, the mood of the psalm. Then I'll read it again, and you can sort of insert yourself, right? Like, what's my response to that? And then I'll read it a third time, and maybe something will jump out as being particularly important for you in this moment. But let's just try it. We can chat about it. So here we go. I lift my eyes toward the mountains. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. Your protector will not slumber. Indeed, the protector of Israel does not slumber or sleep. The Lord protects you. The Lord is a shelter right by your side. The sun will not strike you by day or the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all harm. He will protect your life. The Lord will protect your coming and your going, both now and forever. I lift my eyes toward the mountains. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. Your protector will not slumber. Indeed, the protector of Israel does not slumber or sleep. The Lord protects you. The Lord is a shelter right by your side. The sun will not strike you by day or the new moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all harm. He will protect your life. The Lord will protect your coming and your going, both now and forever. I lift my eyes toward the mountains. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. Your protector will not slumber. Indeed, the protector of Israel does not slumber or sleep. The Lord protects you. The Lord is a shelter right by your side. The sun will not strike you by day or the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all harm. He will protect your life. The Lord will protect your coming and your going, both now and forever. So what did you guys notice?
I came up with questions, and maybe this is because I'm doing the analytical thing, which I know we're not supposed to be trying to do, but I'm curious about in the next last stanza, the sun will not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. And to me, that I don't quite get that imagery, because, well, living in Texas, I do get the idea of the sun striking you, because we've all been there, but the moon striking you, I'm not sure I grab the imagery completely, other than maybe just the complete encompassing of both day and night. I don't know.
Well, I think that actually kind of connects with something that I noticed, which is as you capture the full theme, right? He's the images of a guy standing probably in the desert, looking up to the mountains, which shield him, the things that provide shelter, but feeling very exposed. And so there's this God, the protector, the shelter, keeps coming back as something that never leaves, never goes away, never, you know, he's always over there and he's covering you. He's providing that shelter. So I think that's where the sun by day, moon by night, it's like at night, if you're exposed at night and the moonlight is hitting you, that's a dangerous place to be. You want to be inside, covered, protected, hit. Just like in the day, you know, if you're out in the desert and the sun is on you, I mean, the sun itself will kill you, but you also, you're just exposed. There's nowhere to run and hide. There's no shelter over you, and you need that. So I get this image in my head of the wanderer alone in the wilderness, feeling extremely exposed. But his comfort is God is always covering him, always sheltering him.
Yeah, that seems to line up with the whole theme, which just seems to be that of like God's protection. Mm-hmm. I mean, that what you guys are saying and pointing out, that was my first thing I tried to jot down, like you said, to have a pencil handy. It's just like, all right, protection. Mm-hmm. God protects.
Mm-hmm.
And so those lines make sense in that overall theme and, mm-hmm. and the scheme of the psalm for me. I think the experience, I like that image. You're talking about the spiral, the hermeneutical spiral of like each time you read it, you're kind of getting a little bit closer. For me, the second go through was like, okay, protection, good. But I was really noticing how I felt that God's ability to protect was being contrasted with the feeling of vulnerability that mm-hmm. the psalmist was like, you know, mm-hmm. And it didn't actually have like, oh, I feel so weak and all this, but it was like, I could just sense that, like, that was my response of like, you know, I'm looking up to the hills, I'm vulnerable, but you're strong, like sort of just the contrast there of faith mm-hmm. of like, being at the end of your rope, but being reminded that God is capable. And it was interesting. And then sort of trying to go that an additional spiral in with like, what, okay, if I'm sitting with God's ability in light of my own inability, the very last line stuck out to me in the third read through, which was, and he will watch over your coming and your going from this time forth and forevermore. I feel like for me right now, in a coming and going translated to my brain as seasons of change. And I've been doing some work recently with a spiritual director and stuff, but I hate change. I'm so afraid of change. I don't want things to change. And so that line was like, that stuck out to me. It was like, all right, there's the theme of God's protection. There's the theme of his ability over my inability. And then that really hit home for me is like, where am I feeling unable? I'm feeling terrified of change. And yet, so that line about the coming and going is really impactful of just like, almost like all that applies to the seasons of change. You're coming, you're going, when you're not feeling settled, you know, God's going to watch over my seasons of change. And felt a little bit emotional with that, because it's just like, gosh, like that's, for me, that's the particular thing that was resonating. So I...
Thanks, Peter.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's ask this question, and I want to do one more. But Matt, first of all, your question, like, you're not doing something wrong by asking the question, right? Like, I don't want listeners to think you're not supposed to do what you did. Like, that's not overanalyzing. That's just, it captured your attention. And it became an opportunity for us to really, well, what is the theme of this psalm? So that's a great thing to do. But one thing, Matt, I wanted to ask you, which I think Peter just sort of answered, is like, even though you had that question, what did you feel overall as we read through the Psalms? What was the feeling you got?
Safety.
Mm, Yeah. So see, first of all, that the noticing that you felt safe from this psalm, that's the idea that we're going after here. The psalm invited you into safety. It informed your feeling of security. It evoked it from you, called it forth from you. And I, to me too, like, I particularly liked, whether like is the right word or not, but the protector of Israel does not slumber or sleep. So for me and my particular kinds of fears, the idea that God is never gone, that even though I'm asleep when I'm most vulnerable, he's not, was really evocative to me and pulled hope and faith from me out. It let me express it. I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember. God is not gonna stop paying attention. But I would say more importantly than me thinking those thoughts was that I felt that that was true. So I felt safe. All right. Should we, in our final moments here, should we do one of the hard ones, like Psalms for Rage? Let's go ahead and do the imprecatory psalm. Or should we do another similar one to this one? Because one of the psalms that I've been living in lately is Psalm 16, and it's a similar to what we just did. It's a psalm about trust and faith, but it's a little bit different. It's a little bit harder to see how it is that it does a different thing, in my opinion. What's the room's feel here?
I say stay on the current theme. I think if we depart to a different one, we're going to,
okay,
we're going to really dive in.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay. Well, let's do that. Listeners, you can hop on our Facebook page and cry out that you want us to talk about the imprecatory Psalms, where we get to say all kinds. And I picked just to whet your appetite. The one that we have picked is like the hardest one in Psalms. It says some of the harshest stuff that people are always like, how can that be in the Bible? But we're not going to do that one. So let's do Psalm 16 instead. Okay, so I'm going to put this psalm in a category of like psalms that evoke trust, psalms that evoke faith. Bear in mind, of course, that the psalms cannot be easily categorized and reduced. So even the one we just read might have multiple emotions in it that it's dealing with. So here's Psalm 16. And I'm going to do, it's a little bit longer, but I'm going to do the same thing. We're going to read it three times and ask the same question. The question we're going to ask after the third time actually is a little bit different. What did that make you feel? What was your overall impression of the psalm? Psalm 16. Protect me, God, for I take refuge in you. I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have nothing good besides you. As for the holy people who are in the land, they are the noble ones. All my delight is in them. The sorrows of those who take another god for themselves will multiply. I will not pour out their drink offerings of blood. I will not speak their names with my lips. Lord, you are my portion and my cup of blessing. You hold my future. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I will bless the Lord who counsels me, even at night when my thoughts trouble me. I will always let the Lord guide me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my whole being rejoices. My body also rests securely. For you will not abandon me to Sheol. You will not allow your faithful one to see decay. You reveal the path of life to me. In your presence is abundant joy. At your right hand are eternal pleasures. Protect me, God, for I take refuge in you. I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have nothing good besides you. As for the holy people who are in the land, they are the noble ones. All my delight is in them. The sorrows of those who take another god for themselves will multiply. I will not pour out their drink offerings of blood, and I will not speak their names with my lips. Lord, you are my portion and my cup of blessing. You hold my future. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I will bless the Lord who counsels me, even at night when my thoughts trouble me. I always let the Lord guide me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my whole being rejoices. My body also rests securely. For you will not abandon me to Sheol. You will not allow your faithful one to see decay. You reveal the path of life to me. In your presence is abundant joy. At your right hand are eternal pleasures. Protect me, God, for I take refuge in you. I said to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have nothing good besides you. As for the holy people who are in the land, they are the noble ones. All my delight is in them. The sorrows of those who take another god for themselves will multiply. I will not pour out their drink offerings of blood, and I will not speak their names with my lips. Lord, you are my portion and my cup of blessing. You hold my future. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I will bless the Lord who counsels me, even at night when my thoughts trouble me. I always let the Lord guide me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my whole being rejoices. My body also rests securely. For you will not abandon me to Sheol. You will not allow your faithful one to see decay. You reveal the path of life to me. In your presence is abundant joy. At your right hand are eternal pleasures. All right, a little bit longer one, but yeah, what was the mood, feeling, what got evoked from you?
The words that were floating around trying to capture the mood for me was like, I was hearing dependence was being evoked, or like dedication. Maybe some desperation, just lots of D words, but like, just like a, I don't know. I think dependence kind of, I think that's the word that sat with me that kind of described the overall theme. Does that resonate with how you guys understood the mood of the psalm?
Somewhat. I think for me, the thing that got evoked, to steal your word, Brandon, is how often I doubt these things. And the reminder, it's like, this could be my outlook, but I forget and I doubt it. And because of that, it's almost like I've missed out on something. This is available, and yet I've taken my eyes off of it, and because of that there is an impoverishment that I don't have to really live with, and yet it just occurs to me how much I doubt this.
Both of those really resonate with the way that this psalm has been meaning for me. I said earlier that this one I've been kind of living in for a while. I've been reading this psalm for about 3 or 4 weeks now. And I started kind of where you were, Matt. I was really frustrated with this psalm because, and even in my reading it with some of my directees, right, the question continually comes up for myself and for others. Sort of a kind of a what the hell, God? Like the boundary lines sure don't feel like they've fallen in pleasant places for me right now. I really don't feel like I have a very beautiful inheritance. And can I actually trust you? Like, really? You know, are you going to protect me? And I think that I really feel that deeply sometimes. But my perspective on this psalm shifted when I didn't read it as a promise. Like, I don't think this psalm is a promise. This isn't God saying, here's the things I'm going to do for you in this life, in the way you expect. Now I'm reading the whole psalm as like it's an anthem. The music that plays behind this psalm for me is like triumphant. I believe this. Dang it. This is my battle cry. This is my creed. This is what I stand for. And so I hear things now like, Lord, you are my portion and my cup of blessing. You hold my future. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places, not as a declaration of fact, but as a statement of, I believe, Lord, help my unbelief.
Hmm.
And I think that makes sense because he contrasts, right? It's the part at the beginning that doesn't seem to fit until you recognize what's going on here. What's the deal with the holy people in the land? Why delight in them? Because they're the ones that worship God, not the false gods. And so he's like, look, the people who worship false gods, and in our day and age, that's money, pleasure, you name it, comfort, lack of change. You know, I'm not going to. And so here's the battle cry. I refuse to sacrifice to those gods because that turns out bad. I'm not even going to speak their names. And then comes the declaration of faith. Lord, gosh darn it, you are my portion. I will look to you. You are the one who protects my future. I'll look to you. And then he just keeps saying it. I'm going to listen to the Lord who counsels me, even at night, when I don't feel like it. I'm going to listen to the Lord. I'm going to believe he's at my right hand. And the hardest part is the end. Therefore, my heart is glad. My whole being rejoices. My body rests securely. I have felt that palpably as an act of faith. This is being done to me. This is me choosing it. All right. I know God is God. I know that it's true that he's protecting my future. So I'm going to be glad. And I'm going to rejoice. And I'm going to rest. Darn it.
Darn it. Dadgummit.
But he follows that, right? Why? Why am I going to act that way? Because he will not allow his faithful one to see decay. He will reveal the path of life to me. I do believe that in his presence is joy. And I believe that he has eternal pleasures. That's why I'm going to do it. So for me, this psalm has this like creedal victory. You know, I resonate with this because I have one song on my Spotify playlist called Winner's Anthem, and it's an EDM song. And it sounds like the song that plays in the final boss battle on a video game. And when I'm feeling particularly blue, I sometimes put that song on. I'm like, I'm
going to win
this battle. And I feel like that's this song.
Okay, so we need to reach out to that band and get them to dub in this psalm over that song.
Yeah. Well, anyway, listeners, I really hope you have enjoyed and benefited from this. We pray for you. We pray that you will be encouraged, that faith will be evoked in you. From this episode and really from all of our episodes. So thank you guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear your feedback. We send us an email, podcast@signpostin.org. Join the Facebook group. We'd love to hear just how you're doing. And we'd love to know how the Lord is strengthening your relationship with Jesus. So thank you very much. May the grace of Christ go with you wherever the road takes you.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Signpost Inn Ministries, a nonprofit Christian ministry dedicated to strengthening people's relationship with Jesus and walking with them compassionately on their life's journey. We offer spiritual direction, retreats, and lots of other resources like this podcast. Please visit us at signpostinn.org to learn more. We especially want to thank our generous donors who support our work and keep this podcast going. If you've benefited from something you've heard, please consider supporting us by making a tax-deductible gift at signpostinn.org/donate. We also want to thank Rex Daughtry for creating the original theme music for this podcast. You can check out more of his work at his website, and you can find all the links in our show notes.